This is K2BAR. Any stations with emergency or priority traffic, please call K2BAR at this time.
W2AKR repeater.
Thank goodness, nothing heard. Good evening, everybody. This is Gordon, W2TTT, Whiskey 2 Tango, Tango, Tango. And this is K2BAR, the amateur radio station of the Bergen Amateur Radio Association. We operate a TechNet here on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. through the facilities of the Bergen County FM Association, who operates this repeater and also the 441 repeater we use on Tuesday nights for the 440 net. At this time, we will be gathering stations to check-in. The format of the TechNet's a little different than most normal nets that you operate, probably. All stations are encouraged to check in, and basically you come with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. The purpose of this net is to basically discuss any subject within amateur radio, because amateur radio is by its nature a technical hobby. So all aspects, even if it's a matter of you know, how to properly call somebody or interact with other people in a certain mode or whatever, everything from the courtesies to the soldering to the design of this and that are all technology in our hobby and therefore subject to discussion during the TechNet. All amateurs are welcome to participate in the net as long as you're licensed to operate on 2 meters, and we hope that you will. This net is conducted every Thursday night, as I said, at 9 p.m. The regular 2-meter net is Wednesday night at 9 p.m., again on this repeater. The PL for this repeater is 141.3, 141.3 for the subaudible tone, and we use a minus 600 split if you're listening on 146.79. On Tuesday night, we use 443-100, again at 9 o'clock, for another general-purpose chat net. And finally, on Mondays, we operate a 10-meter sideband net, 10-meter upper sideband at 28.350, 28.350, again at 9 p.m. on Monday night. The club's meetings are...
And...
Station call?
Good evening.
Okay, I thought I heard something there. Okay. Station's meetings, monthly meetings, are the first Sunday of the month, unless there's a overwhelming reason not to, such as a religious holiday. First Sunday of the month. At 7:45 is the meeting, but we gather around 7 o'clock at the Red Cross Building in Ridgewood. Again, anybody's welcome to come. And also, we have a kit night most Tuesday nights during the school year, subject to school functions and school closures, again around 7 p.m. at the Westwood High School in Washington Township. Yes, Washington Township is the host of Westwood High School. It's a very confusing picture. Anyway, on that happy note, I invite everyone to check in an orderly fashion, again, with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question. Stations with a November at the beginning of their call, please call now. This is K2BAR.
Comments later.
Okay, I think NJ1W Dave. No question, is that right, Dave?
No questions, but I do have a comment.
Okay, your comment's noted. N3CRT, Charlie, I heard you, and I think you had a comment. Is that correct?
Yeah, sure, why not?
Okay, any other November stations, please call K2BAR.
NS2K, comment only.
Okay, Jim and S2K, very good. Another comment. Wow, a 3 for 3. At least we've got a discussion point. Any other stations with November, please call K2BAR. Okie doke. Let's try Whiskey Stations. Whiskey Stations, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
This is Whiskey India 2 Whiskey Steve. No comments, no questions.
Okay, Steve, good evening to you, WI2W. There's another station doubling with you. Who was that?
That was Rich, W2VU. No comment.
Okay, Rich. No comment. Very good. W2VU, very good. K2BAR. Any other whiskey stations, please call K2BAR.
W4DSA, Daniel, no questions tonight.
Oh, Danny boy, I hear you calling. Okay, very good, Daniel. No problem. Good evening to you, W4DFA, K2BAR. Anybody else with a whiskey call?
W2JEK, Don, no question.
No comment.
Okay, Don, I got a no comment. And thank you very much, W2JEK. There's another station with a no comment underneath you. Who was that?
WE2R, Charles.
Charlie, hello there, in retirement. I am jealous, Charlie. Anyway, WE2R, good for you. From K2BAR, it's the second time I've flubbed tonight. I normally don't flub at all. Alrighty, any other whiskey calls, please call K2BAR.
W2VBB, Tim, no questions.
Okay, Tim. W2 Victor, 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 K2BAR. So far, all the N's had a comment. All the W's have nothing. I can't wait to see if there's more to this. W2VVV, very good, Tim. Any other whiskey stations, please call K2BAR. Okay. Any Alpha stations, please call K2BAR. With your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment.
AB2XT. John, with a question.
Okay. AB2XT, K2BAR. Very good. By the way, just out of curiosity, is there a squeal on my signal?
Yes, there is.
Yeah, I'm hearing it. I'm trying to figure out what it's from. Okay. I'll look into that. In the meantime, any other office stations, please call K2BAR. Okay, very good. Any other, let's see, Kilo stations. Kilo stations call at this time, K2BAR.
KB2LCA, Gary. Question.
Good evening, Gary, KB2LCA with a question. Alrighty, any other stations with a Kilo, please call K2BAR.
KC2KXV, Vinny, no questions.
You're breaking the pattern. Don't you learn? KC2KXV. K2BAR. Good evening, Vinny. Any other Kilo stations, please call K2BAR.
K2DSL, David, no question.
K David, very fine. Wait a minute. See if I can change that. I'm trying to figure this out. What is causing this? Alrighty. Well, we'll figure it out in due time. Very good. K2DSL, good evening to you, Mr. Dave. K2BAR, anybody else? I'm sorry, I had the squelch up too tight. Again, please. Okay. Boy, I don't know what that is. That's going to annoy me now. Alrighty. Hopefully it wasn't a byproduct of something happened here tonight. All right, any other stations wishing to check into the Barra Technical Net, please call K2BAR with your call sign, your name, and whether or not you have a question or a comment. Okay, at this time, I want to thank everybody for participating and coming in tonight, and we will go right to the questions, I think, first. I solved the problem. It was... No, I didn't solve the problem. It's my work laptop making that noise. I don't know what it is. I'll have to find out what it is. In the meantime, let's go to the questions first. AB2XT, H-U-B-A-R. Your question, John. Good evening.
Good evening, Gordon. This is AB2XT. My question is about the national traffic system, believe it or not. Tonight I got a telephone call out of the blue from a gentleman who said he's, he said he's the national traffic system. And I had, again, a message from a guy up in New England. Gave me a call sign and a name, which I'll leave out of the discussion for the time being. And the guy said something about greetings to amateur radio and, you know, welcome, or congratulations on the call sign or something. Now, I have no idea who the guy is. Maybe it's somebody I knew a long, long time ago, but I don't really know. But is this normal, typical, odd? The reason is, you know, with all various scams out there and whatnot, this is the first time I've ever dealt with getting a message and, you know, from somebody who never heard of. So, can you explain a little bit about the national traffic system and would it be unusual to get something from somebody out of the blue because you got a license upgrade back to that?
No. Okay. I've managed to slowly isolate the noise source, I think. No, it's not terribly unusual. It's pretty common. The NTS folks use the fact that they have to generate training messages to also recruit, which is not a bad thing. And my guess is the message you got was delivered via, well, I don't want to speculate as to where I think the message originated because I have no idea, but I might have a clue who delivered it. In any case, it is perfectly normal. I'm sure you learned a little about the national traffic system, and you can look it up as well online. It's a good thing to know how to pass message traffic. Amateur radio has their format. And very often in ARES, the Amateur Radio Emergency Service, we have not only to use that format of message, but the message format of whatever served agencies we might engage ourselves with, such as the Red Cross, the Salvation Army. If we get put into a secondary position with RACES, all sorts of things like that, you'll find yourself using all sorts of different message formats, and you kind of have to learn them real quick and just deal with it. In any case, that's the short answer to it. I'll let you respond, then we'll pass it around and see if anyone has any further comments on the point. AB2XT from K2BAR.
Okay, very good, Gordon. So I'm guessing the guy uses triggers on new call signs or whatever as a way to do some practice, which is fine. Just ignore it. On the line that you have still coming in loud and clear, way up above... 2 kilohertz, pretty high up there. So that's fine with the NTS, and I do have another technical question, but put me at the end of the list and take all your other ones if there's something, you know, the time, I'll ask the second question at the end of the go-round. Back to net.
Okie doke. That works. That's just fine. All right. Anybody else want to chime in on the subject of NTS? Please call K2BAR.
And 3CRT.
Okay, Charlie.
You know, years ago, many moons, when I upgraded to General, I got an NTS message from N3EFW over there in Strasbourg, but I was in Texas, so I got the... message delivered to me on my phone, but it was routed through to a guy in Texas, and then he dialed my number in New Jersey and got me on my cell phone. But so that's the way it goes. Some of the guys monitor the new call signs or upgrades, and they will fire off either via certain automated systems like a packet network, or through the regular old local traffic nets or the CW traffic nets on HF. They'll fire off and generate all these messages just to keep the system moving. And it's neat. You can send someone a message all the way across the country via relay, the Amateur Radio Relay League. That's what it was started to do. Back to the net at 3CRT.
Yeah, okay, I don't know if I can do this. No, I can't. My other radio... Let me stop torturing myself here. I was hoping to see if I could sort out the problem. It seems that now I hear it on FM, but only on this repeater. I just dialed up another couple of repeaters, and that whistle does not exist on other frequencies. It's really bizarre. And I do actually hear it on receive, and you're right, it's a very high frequency. And, I'm about to load up MixW to find out how high. In any case, yeah, I mean, you need training messages, and why not greetings to other amateurs as they upgrade or get licensed, as the case may be, as a valid training mechanism that seems to work. And again, you have the added bonus of having a reason to recruit someone into the hobby, or into that aspect of the hobby. As I said, there are many wonderful aspects of amateur radio, and that's just another one of them. By the way, just as an FYI, Charlie, it's the American Radio Relay League, and back in the bad old days, they didn't have a hierarchical net structure, they had a trunk line structure where A passed it to B, who passed it to C, et cetera, et cetera. So it was very linear, and then they replaced it with great turmoil and strife and sermon drang and all that good stuff to the hierarchical system that they have now of local nets, section nets, sometimes a statewide net, and regional nets and area nets, and then the Transcontinental Corps, I always thought that was a cool name, anyway, will send your traffic between areas and then back down the food chain again. So that's pretty much how it works. Are there any other comments from anybody else regarding NTS?
Question.
Go ahead, question.
AB2XT again. Is the courtesy of a reply expected?
It's not required, unless it was specifically requested as part of the message that you received.
Okay, thank you. Back to that.
Can we ask who delivered it?
Yeah, I don't know who delivered it. The message came from somebody named Gil, W1GMT. And when you look him up, his name is Robert Moore, Tewksbury, Massachusetts. I don't know where the Gil comes from. But I don't know who called me. I didn't get his name or call.
Can you give us the first six digits on the caller ID?
I'm not anywhere near that technical. I'm about as low tech as it gets. No caller ID, no cable TV, etc. Sorry, back to that.
Okay. I would not have guessed that, John. I would have figured you were, you know, wired for sound. Okay, very fine. Any other, questions? Let's see, we have Gary's question is next. KB2LCA from K2BAR.
Hi, everyone. Bruce, this is Gary, KB2LCA. My question having to do with tilt balance. The one that's on a PVC form. This one, I guess, would be like 4 inch, 1 1/4, 1 1/2 inch pipe, like a sewer type pipe. And for my application, I need, this is for a 1-to-1 vellum, and this thing like 18 to 25 turns, up to 25 to take care of, say, 160 to 20, or, shorter than turns, like 18 turns, would be like for, well, it would be better maybe if you had two of them. I want to make my own and not use the formula, but use it as far as the footage. Now, I do have an MSJ analyzer, and I understand that I could put a one of those probes, or possibly I can make one, and then lightly couple it to it, and you know, put so many wraps and then check it out. Do I have to, or I could use a grid tape measure, but, and I guess I could use probably something else too, but anyway, that's the subject. I guess if I wanted to make it specific for one band, one frequency, I'd find a set of frequency, I guess, try to go up on 5 band, lower on 6 band, that kind of thing. I'm going to drop it.
So I'm trying to reach for your question, Gary.
Yeah, my question is, how should I go about this? Should I use a grid tube meter, or should I use the amateur analyzer? What is better? That kind of thing. And then lightly couple it, you know, you're supposed to put it up to it, but not too close. And then should I put it in the center of it, or on one end, or how should it be done? I've looked all over, and the handbook really doesn't cover that so far. I was looking at it last night, and I couldn't find too much.
You know, I don't know. I honestly do not know. Are any of our panel of mavens interested in or able to take a shot at this question? Oh dear, you've stumped the mavens.
I don't think he stumped us. It's a matter of hearing. It's very difficult to understand what he's saying.
Okay, I'll give it another shot. Is my signal clear? It's clearer when you speak up, and then it's even better when you form a question. Okay, well, I did, but I'll say it again. How is it best used to use either the MFJ analyzer or a grid dip meter to find the residence of a choke valve made out of coax wrapped around a PVC pipe? That's pretty straightforward. Is it a half wave or a quarter wave? The antenna is a random loop antenna. No, I'm thinking the balun. I guess you're basically trying to, I don't know. In all honesty, Gary, when I've made balun's, I haven't worried about whether or not they're resonant as much as I am whether or not there's just simply enough turns to decouple the energy so that it you know, what needs to be inside the coax is inside and not on the outside. You know what I'm saying? No, I understand. This is for a one-to-one valve. No, I understand that, but the form, in other words, you could wrap up to between 18 to 25 turns on a 4-inch valve, preferably with a solid dielectric, because as you bend it, the softer stuff or the air stuff is going to bend and it's going to deviate inside the coax. But the reason why you go from either your 18 to 25, it's a estimate, because it's covering, that's for a multi-band antenna, but you can make them specific to a band, to one, you know, to a set of frequencies.
W2VVV.
Go ahead, Tim.
I could be wrong, so if somebody could correct me, but, you know, the term balun is an abbreviation for balance, to unbalance, and I thought it was just a matching network, and I didn't think that it had to be resonant at any particular frequency. I think that was just like an approximate, you know, throw together 18, 25 loops or something like that, so, but I could be wrong. Is there any necessity in trying to make that resonant at a particular frequency? Yeah, maybe somebody can answer that. This is W2PBB.
Well, it's just the way that I want to do it. And the antenna is going to be a random wave loop. It's going to be fed with 600 ohm line, and then about maybe 20 feet of parallel coax to a one and one, and then the tuner. And that's basically how I want to do it. Now, I know I could, for my purposes, I would like to do it like that instead of having like one balance fits all kind of application.
Okay, I'm just wondering if there's a necessity to do it that way and what the accommodations are that you have to make. Tell you what we do. Let's table this question. Let's all, while we're on the net here, maybe make our fingers do a little walking, do some research for Mr. Gary. We can come back with an intelligent answer because clearly we're struggling for one right this time. So, Gary, we will get back to you on this point, okay?
Okay. Yeah, I've been doing some research. It's not something that is, it's a handbook. I can't find anything. There's no, there's very little reference. The only reference to a coax balun is one that you would tie up randomly with, say, electrical tape on a, you know, just like free. You know, you wrap six or eight turns without a form, which is not a good idea. You don't want the first and the last touching each other or whatever. But I was wondering, since I stumped everyone, do I get a prize or anything like that?
No. But you are talking up more, you know, in a much more improved way into your microphone. So I guess that's a good thing as well. So the payoff is that we're getting a clearer to understand Gary out of the picture. So we win.
Okay. this microphone is, I don't know if I'm ever holding it too close. This is about like 4 inches, 5 inches away, 6 inches away. This is like really close. Which is better?
Eat the mic.
Good evening.
There you go. There's your answer, baby. All right. On that note, we have a couple of comments, and then we have one more question from John. So let's roll around to that, and then we actually do have a topic tonight, which I'm holding in advance because it deals with various aspects of emergency power and how poignant that proved to be. Little anecdote that goes with it. So the first comment is from Dave, NJ1W. It's all yours, K2BAR.
Okay, K2BAR, this is NJ1W. As you know, I'm interested in QRP and the kit building. Well, perhaps you don't know, but I am interested in kit building and QRP and SDR and digital modes and the like. And something new came to my attention in an email I got from one of the club sites. I get emails from one of the reflectors about the AMQRP club. A couple of members designed a new digital modem for PSK31. It's a handheld, battery-operated digital modem, and they introduced it and announced it at the Digital Communications Conference. And if you go to the AMQRP.org webpage, it's www.amqrp.org, and you click on the NUE PSK31 digital modem link there. There's a 5-minute video that you can access, and it's very interesting. And it's going to be kitted, and I think it's going to be available next month for, I guess, I think around the $60 range. They haven't really come up with a price yet. But I'm very interested in it. I don't know how many other on the net here are interested in digital modes or portable PSK operations. But this is, if you want to go out in the field and use PSK, you don't need a PC. You don't have to tote a laptop with you or anything like that. It's just a handheld device.
And they also made the Micro 908 antenna analyzer, which I built, which works very well. It's comparable to the MFJ, if not even better, because it has more capabilities past just analyzing your antenna. That's something else they were going to incorporate the PSK modem into. So I just thought I'd bring that to your attention. I hope I'm not timing out. I'll turn it back to that K2VAR. This is NJ1W.
W2AKR repeater.
Be okay. Let's see. Very good. And John, thank you for that email. It's probably then something that's not necessarily our stations, but it could be. We'll see. All righty. That's very good, Dave. And I have gone to that website, the American QRP Club, and I see the what do you call it? They have an NUE PSK 31 box. Oh, how cute. So you basically just strap this on top of your other box and away you go. What do you do to enter messages is my question.
Hey, Gordon, you use a keyboard.
Really?
Yeah, this thing is really cool.
Oh, I see the keyboard. I see it. And it's got a PC keyboard connector on the side. Oh, that's awesome.
There's a 5-minute demo video in that link that you probably clicked on. If you go down, there's one of the links that gives a 5-minute video demo, and it's really great.
Okay. Charlie, you going to add this to your webpage?
Yes, I will.
Okay, so let's do this. Charlie will generally add it to his TechNet webpage, so it's www.n3crt, like November 3 cathode ray tube .net/technet T-E-C-H-N-E-T. So n3crt.net/technet. And Charlie will have that link up there as well, so you can always browse that. It seems to be the official, unofficial website of this net. We can put things up in like real time. It's very cool. Alrighty. Well, Dave, thank you very much for this pointer. It's a very cool thing, and I see they have other things related to PSK there as well. So, is there anything else you want to add at this time?
No, that's about it. Except I updated my picture on QRZ of my latest SDR project.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to update your picture of you, but okay, that's fine. We will check that out as well. Maybe a hot link directly to his page is in order, Charlie. On QRZ. Alrighty, well thank you for sharing that. N3CRT, I'm gonna skip you because you're typing something probably. NS2K, Jim, what is your comment?
K2VAR, NS2K. Good evening. One of the things that I run across here, a few weeks ago, is something that I don't get to use often enough, but I'm sure some other folks would. It's a little add-in for Firefox called PropFire. It's a little widget that adds itself into the lower right corner of the Firefox window that has propagation conditions. Very low footprint, it's almost no impact on anything. It's just a little message that lands down in the lower right corner. Anyway, you can find information on that if anybody were interested on www.n0hr.com and then look for PropFire. Propagation for Firefox, I guess what it stands for. But it's a cute little tool. I wonder if anybody else has run across the darn thing.
Comments from anybody about PropFire?
M3CRT
I haven't used PropFire, but I do use his toolbar, the NOHR toolbar.
Okay, well, maybe you can add that link as well, Mr. Charlie.
Yeah, what was the other guy's call sign with the PSK box? Was it N1JR or something like that?
November Juliet, 1 Whiskey, Dave.
Say it again, I have a brain fart.
November Juliet, 1 Whiskey, NJ1W, his name is Dave.
Okay, I'm adding things now. I'm trying to get my Dreamweaver open here.
Okay, well, while you're getting your Dreamweaver open and you've got the N0HR toolbar and not to mention PropFire, thank you, Mr. Jim, for that. That's NS2K, November Sierra, 2 Kilo. Would you like to, give us your comment too as well, Charlie?
Would I like to want my other radio open to squelch, and I couldn't hear what you said?
You logged into the net with a note that you had a comment.
Yeah, for anybody that my computer's making noises. For anybody that didn't hear me on the net last night, the 2-meter net, I was able to talk to Andrew, KC2KIS, who is now ZK3KIS, over IRLP. His node is 6340. 6340, and that's in Melbourne, Australia, I believe. And I was accessing it via the K2GCL repeater. That's 443.100 with a positive offset and a tone of 141.3. That's in Franklin Lakes, or if you can't get up to Franklin Lakes, you can try the W2RN repeater, 443.75, positive offset, 141.3, and that's in Woodridge. And I talked to Andrew for about 20 minutes the other day, and he's getting active. He's got a 20-meter dipole. He's on 20-meter via G5RV, a multi-band dipole, and he's got that at about 30 feet. So we had a nice chat the other night, and that's all I had really. I'm gonna try to add that information onto my webpage here too. So be checking over the next 5-10 minutes, and I'm going to have this stuff up at n3crt.net /technet, and this is n3crt back to the net.
Most excellent. Okay. Well, that's useful. Thank you very much, Charlie. And thank you for taking care of this little bit of webmastering. Now we have one more question. I keep on keying. Using a foot pedal, and it's really in a bad place. I got to move it between transmissions here. Too much office clutter. Anyway, about how many of you guys who've been hams more than 5 years in the same ham shack, don't have a cluttered office or cluttered ham shack? I'm curious as to who you are and what you do to keep it that way. Anyway. That's my question. I'll let you guys ponder that while we get John's question. AB2XT from K2BAR. Your question number two, sir.
K2BAR, this is AB2XT. With apologies to Don, I was talking to him at the ham fest, and we covered a couple of topics. But one thing he mentioned, something that I hadn't really paid any attention to, studying radio. And I bought a copy of a 1960 copy of the amateur handbook. I just want to read two sentences out of this. This is about a receiver and choice of intermediate frequency. And the statement says, page 98, of course this is probably in many different books, but the selection of an intermediate frequency, we're assuming we're like designing a receiver. So the selection of an IF is a compromise between conflicting factors. And here's the thing that's interesting. The lower the IF, the higher the selectivity and gain. Now, I want to stop right there. The question is, why is that? Somehow this doesn't intuitively makes sense in my mind, so that if I was trying to tune 7 megahertz with a 5 megahertz IF, why that wouldn't be as selective as 7 megahertz going to a 500 kilohertz IF. This is, or maybe I have it wrong, but that's basically my question. Why, could you explain a little, and Don mentioned it, but it just kind of went over my head. Why the lower the intermediate frequency, why you would get higher selectivity.
Okay, I think I can answer that question. Yeah, I just had to move that foot pedal. Okay, here's the deal. From 5 to 7 megahertz, you're going to see a major performance shift in selectivity or gain? Answer, no. Okay, let's get that off the table. You know, we're talking about things in relation to orders of magnitude and maybe, you know, a little bit less or a little bit more, depending on what you're doing. But, you know, the difference between, you know, 500 kilohertz and, you know, 5 megs could be significant. Although today, the selectivity issue and the gain issue, for that matter, are less of an issue because, frankly, as a function of frequency, because we have better manufacturing techniques and we have really cool devices. You know, when that was written in 1960 or 62, whatever, basically we're in a mode where, you know, going to 15 meters meant performance compromises, even 20 meters sometimes meant performance compromises if you weren't careful to design to maximize your effectiveness. By the time you got to 10 meters, you were dealing with near VHF in some people's minds, and so that was an issue. Building crystal filters, let's talk about that. I mean, if you have to sit there and mechanically build a crystal filter, and you have to, you know, match the crystals such that you get the right characteristics in your filter, or you're building a mechanical filter, the mechanical precision, that manufacturing precision is harder to do. Today we have all sorts of techniques and controls to make that better. Having said that, we go back to Dave's favorite subject, software-defined radio, and now you can do the whole thing, you know, with FFTs, you know, fast Fourier transforms. So as a consequence of that, the whole dynamic is, you know, on the table for discussion, because, you know, if you have enough CPU power to make enough samples, you can pretty much get the same performance at 5 megahertz as you can at 50 kilohertz, at 500 kilohertz, pardon me. I think that's a fair statement. Anybody want to either contrast, compare, or compliment those observations, please call K2BAR.
W2JK.
How did I know? Go ahead, Don.
Yeah, well, I think basically back when in a lot of this old receiver design, I think of something like a Hammerlin Super Pros of that era, or the earlier eras, and also the something like a Hammerlin Howcraft SX-28, which was a top-of-the-line receiver, had a 2 RF stages ahead of the converter, and then they converted to a 455 IF, and somewhere in there I think they might have had a crystal filter. But the thing is that if you had as your frequencies got higher, the reason for the extra IF RF stages was to keep out reduce the image, because it would attenuate them more. Now today we use something like a 9 megahertz IF, and we have a crystal filter at 9 megahertz, which strips a lot of that stuff out, and yet the image being 9 megahertz away from the local oscillator, it's an example that would be a 40 meter, 80 meter receiver. but you just by changing the front end tuning, the same VFO frequency would either tune a signal in the 20 meter band or the 80 meter band. They also had one of these radios in the in some of the 1960 vintage handbooks, like a 1600 or 1750 kilohertz, where you could just change the front end to an 80 or 40 meter. But to get the selectivity, which is another name, people found that the lower frequencies, such as an 85 kilohertz or a 50 kilohertz, I have, just a minute, a 50 kilohertz I have, would give more selectivity. Thus, I have an example of that is a Drake 2B receiver. It's basically an 80 meter receiver with a 455 KC IF. And has another IF that is 50 kilohertz after that for the extra selectivity that that 50 kilohertz IF gives. And then it has, for the other bands, crystal control converter that converts, it's a broadband kind of a thing, to 80 meters. So basically what you're doing is tuning an 80 meter receiver to the output of the converter. So actually you have a triple conversion receiver. Another example I have is my Hargraft is S76, had a 1650 kilohertz first IF and then a 50 kilohertz second IF to gain that selectivity. And people used to, I mentioned to John that people used to use the old BC453 ARC 5 receiver with its 85 kilohertz IF tuned to 455 KC, which is what that receiver tuned to. And they'd pick up the IF in the communications receiver and run it into the BC453 for the selectivity that it gave. Back to net, W2JK.
Hey, I did that. That's pretty cool. Boy, I guess I'm showing my age too, Don. Anyway, that's very cool. Anybody else want to make some comments? Okay. Basically, I think we've kind of hammered that one home here. I found myself using all sorts of receivers over time, and, when Don mentioned the Hammerland, I said, gee, that was one of my first receivers that was really cool. Super pro, anyway. I also had a Holographer, and my first really good receiver, quote-unquote, was a National NC33, followed by an HRO60. But anyway, enough of that. In any case, did we answer your question, John?
Well, I don't want to tie people up, but actually, no. I'm wondering, is there a mathematical relationship or something? Because the definition, I understand, is the ability to discriminate against signals. I'm reading right out of a book, so sounds good. Against this ability to discriminate against signals of frequencies differing from that of desire. So if I'm tuning, if there was a bunch of hams, and by a miracle, they were all at 1 kilohertz apart from 7 meg out to 7050, and if you looked at it on some kind of a band scope, it looked like a comb. Then there's a CW station every 1,000 hertz, and I'm assuming that I'm tuning in 7005. I've got a guy up at 7006 and a guy down at 7004, and selectivity means I'm going to hear the guy at 7005 if everything's very good, and the other two are completely out of the picture. Does that sound right?
Right, and that's what the crystal filter would do back then. I mean, today, as long as there's not a harmonic relationship between oscillators and the desired spectrum, or an image of a strong signal that you can't filter out, falling into the passband, you're good to go, and it's much easier to do with modern technology with a lot more flexibility.
Okay, I understand. So you can just use the modern stuff, crystal filters and whatnot, And that's less of an issue in 2007 than it was in 1960. Back to that.
Right, and as Don alluded to, I mean, the reason why we use lower sideband on 75 and 80 and upper sideband on 20 is because you could take a 9 megahertz crystal IF, a 5 megahertz oscillator, and by either summing them or subtracting them, you could produce a signal on 14 megahertz or between 3.5 and 4 megahertz.
Okay, so there's no real mathematical relationship between a 500 kilohertz and a 5 megahertz intermediate frequency. You, especially with crystal filters, you can pick a 500 hertz notch and you're all set to go. Is that right?
Yeah, pretty much. Again, you have to be careful. You don't want to create a situation where, let's say you had a 10 megahertz IF and an 8 megahertz oscillator, and you know you were producing products that you don't want. Things got a little too close, or maybe better yet, let's say you had a 7 megahertz transmitter, and you wanted to use that as a VFO for 14 megahertz. Well, you drive yourself crazy doing that. Because you'll have images of yourself all over. So you want to make sure that the sum and difference of your various mixers, not to mention any adjacent strong signals in your environment, are not going to produce a product that pops right in the middle of the passband. Fair enough?
Yep, that sounds right. That makes a lot of sense. Okay, thanks for the information. And I'm going to back off on that one. Back to net.
Okay, just remember, all those principles apply. They just apply less with less importance today. You have a lot more flexibility. You can get the performance and even superior performance than what was attainable then. But they're not bad principles to follow. Let's be clear about that. But they may not be as rigorously adhered to in order to get performance, that's, incredibly superior to what was attainable back then. The old story of how much did I have to spend in $1970 in order to be on, 80 through 10, 6 meters and 2 meters, and at least be able to put an FM signal on 2 meters in addition to single sideband and CW? And the answer is a lot of money. I mean, a lot of money. A 2-meter multimode rig costs $700. A TS-700 costs $699. And that was just for 2 meters multimode. And, a good synthesized rig, pardon me, if you could find one, 1970, which is another question, which if we can, if you think about GLB, that was $400 in 2-meter FM money in 1970-ish or so. Maybe more, maybe closer to 500. So you kind of see, today for $500 you can have everything from 160 to 440 and every mode you can think of, general coverage receiver, and if you open it up you can probably transmit in a few other places you shouldn't either. So, that's kind of where the state of technology has gone. And oh, by the way, you're spending $2007, not $1970. So, it's chump change compared to what it was.
Repeater, time out. Repeater, reset. Thank you.
How long did I go?
Good evening.
20 seconds.
Ouch. Okay. Sorry about that, folks. My question at this point was, is there anybody else with a question or comment for the net before we go on to a short topic, which I'm going to bring up?
SW2JEK with the thing about the, to beat that dead horse, but the thing about the IF frequency, Gordon.
If we could only get off the topic. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Don. I'm just making a bad joke.
Yeah, Gordon. All right. I had a National NC57 receiver. This was a tube receiver with a 1 RF stage and a converter and then 2 stages of IF at 455. On 40 and 80 meters, you didn't have too much of an inch problem. But when you get up, this thing, supposedly you could tune in 6 meters. And although I never heard anybody up on 6 meters, I realized that there is images were a lot more prevalent there because the article oscillator was very close to both the image frequency and the desired frequency. In other words, it would be 910 kilohertz away. Now 910 kilohertz away, 455 IF, is a good distance at 40 meters maybe, or 80 meters, but when you get up around 6 meters, the bandpass filters in the RF stage and the converter stage for the tuning that are tuning to the 6 meter band are not that sharp, and the image frequency will be more apparent because it's not being attenuated as much as say a 40 bandpass filter on the 40 meter band. I think that would maybe sort of answer the question. Anyway, I'm going to drop it for that. W2JK.
Okay, well, absolutely. That's a very good example. Alrighty. For this evening, well, before I start, are there any other comments or questions for the net? Please call K2BAR. Okay. Last night and this morning and through the weekend and then again more this morning with N2OEL, who's not here, unfortunately, we've been talking about use of emergency power and his 33-amp deep cycle steel lead acid batteries, which he was gracious enough to lend to me for the New Jersey State Police Campery last weekend, which we used, and I lent one of them in turn to KC2RSS and for his station after we connectorized his radio with Anderson power poles. It turns out that Jim and I were discussing emergency power again this morning, and this and that, and use of connectors and use of this and that, you know, all sorts of emergency power things to consider, along with connectorization of various things that related to his work. And no sooner did that happen, I came home today, was typing away, it's about 6:10, 6:15, and my power just went bang, gone, goodbye. And we have a couple of older people on my block. Let me drop it. We have a couple of people who are clueless on my block. We have a couple of people who have CPAP machines that might need to run during the night. And so quietly arrangements were being made to make sure everybody was hunky-dory and were going to burn their houses down with candles and things like that. And so we talked about it. So my question is, how many of you have a standby power system other than your motor vehicle to operate, and what can you operate? I'm just kind of curious as to what you can operate outside of your motor vehicle, either from home or just setting it up in the backyard or whatever you had to do ad hoc. And would you be able to read your logbook, or if you had to write things down, would you be able to actually do that as well? I'm just kind of curious. You know, simple thing, operating from home, you know, making adjustments for emergency power. As it happened, the other radio I have here, and this one, well, the other one is on standby power all the time, with a power gate, which is a battery maintainer and also a switchover from West Mountain Radio, and I could have put this radio or the Pro 3 on it as well had I had the need. All the computers were charged. I immediately disconnected everything there to make sure we didn't have any problems. Shut down the computers, which had batteries, you know, laptops. So everything was done in an orderly manner, so I was saving all that stuff. So I'm kind of curious, if anybody has specific thoughts on it, and then I might actually want to do a quick roll call to see where people are and what they could operate and for how long. I'd be curious. And using what, basically. So anybody want to jump in first, please call K2BAR.
and O2T.
KC2KXV.
All right, let's take Jerry and welcome him to the net, and then Vinny, NO2T, how's your bride? And answer the question, please.
My bride is doing extremely well after going to the flea market. She's like turning on a light switch. Much better gal. Probably leave the rehab and be home within a week or so. Anyway, what we do is we have a power cord with two males connected. What I do is I throw the circuit breaker box and plug in the power cord with any, well, I have one main socket that I plug into, plug the other one into my generator, start the generator, and I run the whole house. Refrigerator, radios, the whole nine yards. I bought the generator at a fire sale, actually in an auction, sometime after everybody got a scare. When we had the weather event, the Floyd, and next summer people had generators they didn't need, and I got it very cheap for and it's worked ever since. It happens to be a good one too. So that's what I do. I use gas power generator, got plenty of gas, and just plug it into my house power and can run everything and anything. NO2T.
W2AKR repeater.
Okay. All right, so basically you use the gotta be real careful alternative to a transfer switch. Got it. I gotta say one thing about that just up front. While it's done, I think if you burn your house down or make damage from that, your homeowner's insurance, you know, may not apply in certain cases, so just be aware of that. So you can be right as long as you're right, and just never be wrong in making those choices. It's not a bad way to go. And would I do it? Yeah, I would confess I would probably do the same thing, Jerry, but you know, just be aware that there's all sorts of, shall we say, potentialities for failure in that approach. But that sounds great. And up to, let's see, I use power cords and just run them to the critical systems. If I really had to do like what Jerry had to do, just maybe run the heat in January, I might be tempted to pull that stunt as well, but boy, I wouldn't like it. And I would do it across a 220 outlet, just because that way I want to get power to both sides of the bus. And I'd turn off anything we wouldn't need. Anyway, my generator is 8kW with a 13k surge capability and runs about, I guess, 10 hours, 12 hours at 50% load. So that's my deal. Anybody else want to chime in? I think it's Vinny, KC2KXV, K2BAR.
Gordon, I just wanted to give you a different perspective, being the Mr. Cheapskate that I am. Some of it's behavioral here. I basically ask everybody in the neighborhood not to throw out their car batteries. So now I've got 8 car batteries that I have constantly on trickle charge. This is up in Dutchess. And the power goes out there fairly often. And this is the low-end version. What I do is I keep enough power up to power the 746 to be on the air with 100 watts, power the cable modem and the Wi-Fi transmitter so that people can finish their emails, because it's tragic. And there's enough laptops around that allow you to do that. But just as an offer, I find that when you tell people that you're interested in taking their batteries, they also have a big collection of gel cells from people's alarms that I keep kind of charging up from time to time, and I use that on the various radios.
Okie doke. Well, that's a rather novel approach to things, and you know what? It's not a bad way either. About how long do you operate in that mode before you wished you hadn't?
Well, I immediately wish I had a generator, but about 4 hours, 5 hours, it's pretty effective. And I do a lot of listening, but of course, up in Dutchess, when the weather is bad and the cold is on, the wood stove goes up, and of course, I like to notify everybody if there's nobody around that I have no power. So that's what its basic function is.
I see. Okay. Well, very cool. But you only get 4 hours out of 8 car batteries?
Yeah, by the time you add a couple of other lights and a couple of other things and watch the voltage get down to about 11 volts after about 4 hours, it's happened once or twice. But what's novel, what's interesting is, of course, you got to cycle out the car batteries because usually if you're getting one, it's towards the end of its life, so it'll only give you about a year and a half. So every year I'll test the batteries and see which ones get actually thrown out and which ones get kept.
Okay, I would recommend that you speak to N2OEL and ask him a question about that next week, because he had some very strong opinions about paralleling batteries and leaving them in that state. He has found that they tend to cross-deplete each other unless they have some sort of common maintenance charge on them at all times. There can be issues. Basically because of the varying capacities. So unless they're similar, when you parallel batteries, you got to be really careful about essentially them, one of them becoming a load instead of a source of current. And that could be why you're getting such a short period of time out of that stack.
Roger. Yeah, I keep about 3 amps of trickle charge on them almost all the time through a venerable Western Electric transformer and giant bridge rectifier setup, if you can imagine that.
Yes, with a KS number on each one, no doubt. Alrighty, well, thank you, Vinny. That's very interesting. Anybody else with comments about this? Please call K2BAR.
W2JK.
Mr. Don?
Yeah, I don't have a generator. I have a couple of gel cells, and I have a NiCad battery that was used solar panel to charge. That's the one I used at field day. With my battery-friendly QRP rigs, now these are usually a monoband rig because without a lot of fancy DSPA filtering and stuff like that. I can go quite a while with the gel cell. I have never stretched it that far. I know the NiCad that I use for the solar charged bonus at field day, I've made about at least 15 contacts with my 40 meter rig. Riverdale field day site. So, yeah, they only pull about 35 mils on a receive on those radios and maybe over the amp on transmit. So they can last quite a while. As far as we have plenty of batteries here. A lot of my stuff is AA batteries, and I have a good stock of them. Every time I see a bunch on sale, I keep buying them. I do use batteries, AA batteries, in my carbon monoxide alarm, and those get recycled into every 6 months into some other purpose. But the thing that, I do wish I have a generator for is the heat. I have gas hot air heat, and the original furnace had a valve that was operated by a solenoid from the electrical system, but it also had a lever that you could operate the valve manually and turn on the burners. And even though the blowers didn't go on, the burners would put out some heat, and the heat would rise up through the ducts, although not with the force of a fan. Naturally, you couldn't leave this on too long, but enough to because you could overheat the furnace. However, nowadays they've changed all that. You cannot. They don't have the little manual valves on them anymore. So you do need electric power to get your heat up and running. And that's my bugaboo here. One thing I do have that, and Steve mentioned this at one of the meetings at W2ML, is they have these small inverters out now that you can take power from, let's say, your car or a car battery, and convert that to 110 volts AC. So I do have one of those. It's about 150 watts or something. Back to that W2JK.
Yeah, Yeah, absolutely. Those inverters are very nice. I sent my son on a jaunt to either Radio Shack or to an auto parts store with, like, you know, $60 in his hand. I said, go buy as much of a little car inverter as you can find. One day I just needed something to drive something. He said, no problem. And his girlfriend ran down to Radio Shack and came back, you know, $40 poorer with a with a 150-watt inverter. That works very, very well. Cannot complain at all for that little directive. I think he used the rest of the money to take her out to dinner, so I didn't mind terribly. It's what we dads do sometimes, especially when we have compliant sons come running when we ask for help. In any case, he's also KC2NZC, so how could I? Well, you know, I have soft spot for all my sons, but, you know, it's a ham, so I got to be at least nice. Anyway, any other stations with comments about their emergency power capabilities? Okay. Well, one of the last things I wanted to mention was that we had, you know, all the rigs were charged, the computers were charged. Yes, Bob would be happy, even my HTs were charged. I had spare AA batteries. Everything in the shack that runs on battery, small batteries, runs on AA's, with the exception of my camera, and that's something I'm still working on. It uses a special docking station with a regulator built into it, and actually the docking station doesn't have a regulator built into it, the wall wart does, so I'm trying to figure out how to deal with that graciously, because I don't like the stand, I don't like the cord, I don't like the wall wart. So I'm thinking that if I can get a matching connector and a pigtail, and maybe I'll build a quickie regulator and be done with it. So that's my next task for even the little camera. But it worked, you know, that kind of attention to detail paid off with the Orange Box project, which I think some of you know about here. And I will be bringing that to a show-and-tell Barra meeting in the not-too-distant future, whenever we have one. And what else? That's pretty much it. I'm pretty much talked out tonight, which is a good thing. Only timed out the repeater once, only for 20 seconds. I guess I should count my blessings. Any other comments for the net?
Yeah, that'd be two, JK.
There were two. JK, hold on. Who was the other one? Who was the station of double with John? Don? Well, Don, it's all yours.
Yeah, one of the things I used to do with this QRP game that I'm in, they used to give you bonus for using battery power rather than commercial power. And I used to use an old car battery just for that purpose, to get the bonus, and that thing would run for quite a while. However, I think one thing you have to keep in mind, especially you're pulling a lot of current out of those things, is where this is where a deep cycle battery comes into place, and that's a thought too that I often thought of getting a marine battery, a deep cycle marine battery, keeping that, charging it up periodically, and having that as a source of emergency power. But then you have to. What I'd really like that, well, then you could run an inverter with that, or you could charge it with a solar panel, as a matter of fact, during an extended outage, I guess. You need a pretty big solar charge, solar panel to really do any creditable amount of recharging with the thing. But yeah, that's a thought, too, is that you do need deep cycle. They're talking about all these wind machines. This is another thing, too. You talk about all these people talking about this constant power and whatnot. These people putting solar panels on the roof and everything and selling electricity back to public service. But you got to remember that the solar panel makes DC, so it's got to be converted through a converter into AC so that it can be used one way or another. Unless that's made strictly for the DC voltage equipment. So that's another aspect of this whole thing with the solar power and the emergency power. Back then at W2JK.
Okay. Yep. Absolutely. There are things that reach the limits of their utility and or efficiency, and certainly the DC to AC inverters that are applied in the home, while they're not as bad as they used to be, are still not, you know, quite as efficient as you'd like. They're approaching 90%, though, Don. You might be aware. You might be aware that. I'd be happy with 80%, but some of them are up as high as 90%, and I'm very impressed with them. I made the decision not to do that because it was one more system in the house that would, you know, geek out the house and probably freak out a potential buyer in the future. I'll just say this, that most of the buyers who would be likely to buy my house from me in the future are either other hams or geeks, that's a small population, or folks who called home someplace that required them to have a passport and a visa to get here, at least legally. Anyway, so that would be... you don't want to disrupt that sales prospect by geeking out your house too much. In any case, let me see if there are any other comments for the net. This is K2BAR. Okay, well, in summary here, I had 8 kW generator ready to go, fully gassed, a spare 12 gallons of gas appropriately sited. My car had 3/4 of a tank of gas, which means it had in excess of 25 gallons. All the batteries were charged on the computers and on the PC, the radios, and the big, 38 ampere hour deep cycle steel lead acid was a great idea, and that was charged as well. One thing I will say, if you can afford it, lithium ion batteries, the deep cycle ones, are just awesome. They're just awesome, and they're lighter, but they're god-awful expensive. Just something to think about as we go forward in life. I want to thank the Bergen County FM Association for the use of the repeater tonight. I want to thank all you guys for your great comments and questions. W2VU, WE2R, welcome Charlie and Rich. W2VVV, Tim, thank you for your commentary as always. Gary, KB2LCA, for your question, which we still have to work on. And looking through the log here, I did not see anything that would help me with this. Let me drop it. KC2KXV, always Vinny, good to hear you. K2DFL, David. W4DSA, Daniel. W2JEK, Don, for your insights as always. NJ1W, Dave, for that really cool NUE PSK31 thing at amqrp.org or referenceable on the n3crt.net/technet webpage. And let's see, who else? NS2K for your reference to PropFire on the N0 Hotel Romeo site, again referenced on n3crt's website. Thank you very much, both of you, for that. And, of course, N3CRT is our unofficial on-the-fly webmaster. AB2XT, who never fails to, provide us with a question, thank you very much for that. WI2W, who is amazingly quiet tonight. NO2T, for his observations on how to obtain power from a generator into your house and perhaps also, burn down your house. I'm just teasing Jerry. And I'm glad to hear Dory is doing well. And IW2TTT as your net control. So thank you very much. Have a great night. And thank the Bergen County FM Association for these repeaters, and we'll see you soon. This is K2BAR, securing the net and returning the repeater to normal amateur use, such as that is.